we're on track for around 40,000 to 50,000 cases per day. Per day, 40,000 to 50,000 cases per day, according to the Doherty modelling, if we open up at 80% vaccine, under the optimistic scenario that our TTIQ system is no worse than it was in Melbourne last year. Now, I don't think the Australian public understand that the safe plan, and the Prime Minister says the word safe a lot, has anything like 40,000 cases a day in our short-term future.
One for Mum, one for Dad, and one for the country.
And there has never been a more exciting time to be an Australian.
Budgets are about choices, Fran, and you show what you value through the choices you make.
Dead, buried, cremated.
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
The treasurer.
Australia's basically done for. We'll just end up being a third-rate economy. You know, a banana republic.
How good is Australia?
Just follow the money.
G'day, and welcome to Follow the Money, the Australia Institute's podcast demystifying the big economic issues in Australia and putting them in plain English. I'm Ebony Bennett, Deputy Director at the Australia Institute, and today we're going to be talking about the pandemic, Delta, and the national plan that National Cabinet has agreed to. Specifically, we're going to be looking at the Doherty modelling upon which that plan rests and testing some of the assumptions that are in there.
Prime Minister has unveiled the Doherty Institute modelling, which has informed the nation's roadmap about living with COVID-19.
So we've seen all this kerfuffle about the Doherty modelling, which underpins the 70 and 80% targets for freedom.
Gradually reopen Australia once more than 70% of over 16s are fully vaccinated.
The Federation fracturing over the vaccine plan to reopen Australia.
Prime Minister goes on the front foot, championing what he calls a safe plan to end lockdowns. But not all premiers are convinced.
Some state and territory leaders are reluctant to reopen when 70 to 80% of the adult population are vaccinated, while COVID cases remain high.
Doherty doesn't tell us that there won't be lockdowns when we get to 70 or 80%, right?
There'll be a lot more infections and, sadly, many more deaths on the way out of the pandemic, even with ever higher vaccination rates.
Obviously, vaccinations are our best method of defence against the pandemic, but before vaccines were developed, all we really had were public health measures like mask wearing and social distancing, and what's called TTIQ, test, trace, isolate and quarantine. And until now, these are the only methods that have been available to us to help control the spread of the virus. And we know, at least here in Australia, they were pretty much wholly effective. But once the government's of Australia make the decision to begin lifting health restrictions, the virus will spread into the community. Case numbers, hospitalizations, and deaths will likely rise, and it's likely that this will diminish the effectiveness of, in particular, TTIQ. So to talk about this rather concerning possibility that doesn't seem to be part of this current debate about the national plan, I'd like to introduce our chief economist, Richard Dennis, who, correct me if I'm wrong, Richard, did his PhD on economic modelling and who has taken a closer look at the Doherty Institute modelling for the Australia Institute. G'day, Richard.
Hi, Ebony. Yes, no, once upon a time, economic modelling was my mornings, afternoons and nights. But who'd have thought it would come in handy all these years later? But it does, and it even does when you're looking at epidemiological modelling.
Yeah, so we'll come back to that in a minute. But first of all, I wanted to start out really with this idea of TTIQ. What is it and how important has it been?
Look, we've all heard how important our contact traces have been, and no one's ever suggested they're not. But I must admit, until I actually read the Doherty modelling, I didn't really appreciate how incredibly important they'd been. So let me give you a simple example. When the Ruby Princess, the cruise ship, docked in Sydney early last year and disgorged hundreds of people into Australia with COVID, Australia was 100% unvaccinated. There was not a single vaccinated Australian when the Ruby Princess got here. And of course, all through last year, there was no one vaccinated in Australia. The only thing that stopped that outbreak was the ability of our test, trace, isolate and quarantine system, which literally identifies people that have got it, finds them quickly, tells them to isolate, figures out who they've been in contact with, tells them to isolate until they've been tested, and then as soon as people have tested positive, they have to stay in isolation for 14 days. That task, that detective work, literally stopped everyone in Australia being exposed to COVID in the last 18 months. That's why people in Perth today can play in a football grand final, because we stopped the spread of the virus through TTIQ alone. Now, just to be crystal clear, vaccines are really important, and unless a unless a doctor tells you not to get one, please go and get vaccinated. But what we want to do is add vaccine effectiveness to this wonderful test, trace, isolate, quarantine system. We need to have both of those things humming along to avoid lots of people getting sick and dying in Australia. It's not about substituting one for the other.
So it's incredibly important, basically. It's not, we're not just talking about, well, once we've got vaccines, everything's fine. To be clear, TTIQ and other public health measures like social distancing and mask wearing, they're always, were always going to be an important part of the overall plan.
Well, that's what the Doherty modelling is. So it's a bit frustrating listening to politicians say the Doherty modelling is all about vaccination, because the Doherty modelling is all about the combination, the suite of things that we can use to safely get Australia through this pandemic. The Doherty modelling is based on, it's got two scenarios effectively when it comes to contact tracing. It has an optimal TTIQ scenario, which assumes that we're doing a really good job of contact tracing. And then it's got what it's called partially effective TTIQ. And that was based on the fact that in Victoria last year during their second wave, there were so many cases it was hard to keep track. So they didn't do as good a job. Not that they weren't working as hard, but it was just harder to keep on track on top of such a large number of cases.
Of course, there is the test, trace, isolate and quarantine methods and measures. And they will look very different in Phase B and Phase C of the plan, as we discussed last week in National Cabinet, and further work is being done.
It's very difficult to have absolutely perfect TTIQ when you've got thousands of new cases day after day after day. It just gets impossible.
At the moment, we've only got 30% people vaccinated, so 70% of adults are susceptible. Once you've shifted that balance, it does ease the load on contact tracing. And for New South Wales, as we've seen, this has been very difficult to keep up with it at the levels they are right now.
So before we get into the TTIQ, can you just tell me overall, what was the Doherty Institute asked to model? What were the parameters that they were looking into?
Yeah, it's interesting. We didn't say to the Doherty Institute, what should Australia do next? We didn't say to them, of all the things we could do, what do you think? What is the health advice for what we should do? The question the Doherty Institute were asked was, if we wanted to reduce the chance of lockdowns, if we wanted to stop having to rely on lockdowns, how much vaccination would we need? So we didn't say, of all the things we could do, what makes the most sense, what'll save the most lives. We asked the question, if we wanted to stop relying on lockdowns to prevent the spread, how much vaccination should we need? And basically the answer that came back from the Doherty Institute is, if we can maintain contact tracing at least at the level that we saw it in Melbourne during the second wave, and if we can get 80% of the population vaccinated, if both of those things hold up, and if new variants don't come along, and if a whole bunch of other assumptions, then the chances of lockdowns will be a lot lower once we've got 80% vaccination. But the Doherty Institute don't say that we won't have any more lockdowns after 80%. It does not say that at all. It says that lockdowns will be unlikely if we've got high quality test and trace, lots of vaccinated people, and nothing else goes wrong. But Doherty doesn't say stop having lockdowns after 80%.
And the modelling was based upon the fact that if you open up completely at 70%, you'll get hundreds of thousands of cases over 180 days, which we don't want to see, of course. So factored into the modelling was effective test, trace, isolate, quarantine, as well as some public health measures. So there was no freedom day in the modelling at 70%. There never was.
Okay, so yeah, that does seem like an important distinction to draw. I guess most of the national debate, most of what we hear coming out of the Prime Minister's mouth really does focus, and the Premier's to an extent as well, does focus on those vaccination thresholds and case numbers at the moment. But we were just talking more specifically about TTIQ and the assumptions in there about how effective it is. What did you notice when you read the Doherty modelling? What jumped out at you about the TTIQ assumptions?
Well, the first thing is I was just struck at how important it was. I mean, logically, I should have realised at the time, but, you know, it was our only weapon. And that's what got us through last year when the UK was seeing tens of thousands of deaths, when we saw the terrible scenes in New York and across the US. They were unvaccinated. We were unvaccinated. The difference in Australia was that our testing and tracing system was so effective. And one of the reasons it was so effective was that we had a couple of months kind of head start. We could see what happened overseas, and we never let initial cases get very high. So because we never had too many, we could always try and keep track. And what really sticks out, and I encourage anyone just to Google the Doherty modelling and have a look. It's not top secret. It's not a fun read, but you'll be able to get through it if you try. What really sticks out is that just small reductions in the effectiveness of our contact tracing system have really, really big effects in terms of the number of people who are likely to get infected, how quickly those people get infected, and, of course, most concerningly, how many people die. Because if lots of people get sick in a hurry, the hospital system just can't cope. And the Doherty modelling assumes that contact tracing will always be pretty good, but we've already seen in New South Wales they're way past the point. There's just too many cases for their tracing system to be anything like pretty good.
Yeah, so let's just unpack that. So one scenario that Doherty is modelling includes TTIQ that's kind of top-notch. It's on top of every mystery case, every close and casual contact, like it's working at its full effectiveness. Yep. And another one looks at partial effectiveness, which, as you were saying, it's an assumption that it will always be as effective as Victoria TTIQ was at the height of its second wave last year.
Exactly. So in their language, based on New South Wales last year, with low case numbers, they call that the optimal testing and tracing system.
The gold standard, really, if you will.
The gold standard, and it was very good, and they should be very proud. It did a really good job. And by optimal, they don't mean there's absolutely never any mystery cases. It's how quickly they identify people and get to them, and having as few mystery cases as possible. So that's the gold standard, optimal. And then they have in their modelling what they call the partially effective TTIQ. And that's just an assumption that, calibrated towards, as they say, the speed at which they were identifying all of the contacts in Victoria's second wave when it was hitting 700 cases a day. And to be fair to the Doherty modelling, which was done in June this year, maybe it was reasonable to think we'd never see a state let an outbreak get bigger than 700 cases a day. But here we are. Here we are today, yeah, watching New South Wales regularly over 1,000 cases a day with over 80% unlinked cases.
Daily COVID cases now soaring to more than 1,000.
Last night to 8 p.m. there were 1,029 cases of community transmission, and we had 1,290 cases of community.
Had 1,164 cases of COVID.
Sydney has warned those daily numbers are only likely to get worse.
Just to get into that assumption, what you're saying is the two scenarios that Doherty have modelled in this this scenario that the whole national plan that the Prime Minister keeps banging on about, that all rests on this modelling, and contained in this modelling is the assumption that things won't ever get worse than 700 cases a day and our TTIQ will always be that effective. But essentially, we're already beyond that. It's already worse than that because the New South Wales outbreak is already higher than that and the TTIQ is already declining in its effectiveness.
Absolutely. Here with the Doherty modelling, we've got an assumption that the effectiveness of our tracers is never less effective than it was when the Melbourne system was under a lot of strain. And we're using an assumption based on the fact that it never gets worse than Melbourne's second wave. Our politicians are using the conclusions of this model to talk about what's going to happen in scenarios which we're obviously way past that. Again, New South Wales is way past the caseload, and last time they published data, and they've actually stopped publishing data on their mystery cases, The last time they published data, 800 of the 1,000 cases were unlinked. That is, we're not tracing any of those contacts because we have no idea
where they came from or how they got it.
How they got it.
Yeah, that strikes me as rather alarming. And I guess just to reiterate, like, this isn't a flaw of the Doherty Institute modelling. Like, it's done what it was asked to do and it's really clear what its assumptions are. But the flaw is in, I guess, the national plan that rests on top of it and the assumptions contained in that. Is that more or less the case? Like, does Doherty just have to go back and model with TTIQ that's dramatically declined in effectiveness?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, the obvious thing that needs to happen is for the Doherty Institute to go and model the likely spread of the disease when the TTIQ system has collapsed or is near collapse, because that's clearly the path that New South Wales are on.
You know, the modelling should be constantly updated with the latest information, the latest insights of the models, our own local epidemiology. And that's what this team of modellers are doing night and day. They're constantly reviewing new information that's coming in and they may well update things.
So you're right. You know, models have to make assumptions. The problem is that we've now got the Prime Minister and to some extent the New South Wales Premier leaning very heavily on the modelling to justify a course of action that they're determined to take, when the modelling didn't actually anticipate the circumstances that we currently find ourselves in. So for the Prime Minister to say, according to the Doherty modelling, the number of cases we have when we open up doesn't matter, that's true. It's true that according to the modelling, as it's currently structured, it doesn't matter what the initial cases are. But that's not, while that's a fair description of the modelling, it's not a fair description of the world we currently find ourselves living in, because, again, the modellers never anticipated that the New South Wales government would let cases get above 1,000 a day, and they certainly didn't anticipate that 80% of those cases would be unlinked. So when you hear the Prime Minister say, but the modelling says it doesn't matter if there's thousands of cases when we open up, he's accurately describing the model, but the model isn't accurately describing the world that it looks like we're going to be living in.
Look, I think there's some hesitation based on the fact that there's been more cases that have occurred in New South Wales, but as the Doherty Institute made clear again yesterday, that doesn't ultimately have an impact on the conclusion of their modelling. You can't stay here forever, and if not at 70 and 80%, then when? The national plan we've developed and agreed is our pathway to living with this virus, not to live in fear. Otherwise, we stay in the cave forever. And that's not a sustainable solution. This Groundhog Day has to end, and it will end when we start getting to 70% and 80%.
I just want to dig back in. I said at the beginning, you know, your PhD was on economic modelling. Long-time listeners will be very aware that, you know, we warn people to look at the assumptions in economic modelling. Is it that background that kind of helped you dig into these assumptions that are in Doherty? And was there anything else that stuck out to you as an economist reading this modelling?
Yeah, look, you know, I guess I spend my life with my head in technical documents that aren't an easy read. But again, if you're patient, if you read through carefully, I think most people can figure out what's going on. But yes, instantly I realised that the TTIQ system was incredibly important, which instinctively I knew, but I hadn't thought hard enough about. But then when I realised that they only had these kind of two states for TTIQ to be in, optimal or partial, once I realised that they weren't dynamically modelling the effectiveness of TTIQ, once I realised that as case numbers rose, TTIQ quality wasn't falling, yeah, the economist in me kind of went, oh, that's odd. What's going on? So, you know, but I spoke to a few epidemiologists and they said, yeah, you're right. For small case numbers, it doesn't matter. But for big case numbers, that's what we call an heroic assumption. So that stuck out. But the other thing that really stuck out, and, you know, I think, again, please, everybody, go and get vaccinated. It's really, it'll help you. It'll help your family. It will help the health system. It's a really good idea. But if we open up with 80% vaccine coverage, which is exactly what the Prime Minister's aiming for, and our testing and tracing is only partially effective, not fully collapsed, partially effective, as good as it was in Melbourne last year, 80% vaccine coverage and partially effective test and trace means that, according to Doherty, I'm just literally reading this straight out of the Doherty modelling, we're on track for around 40,000 to 50,000 cases per day. Per day, 40,000 to 50,000 cases per day, according to the Doherty modelling, if we open up at 80% vaccine, under the optimistic scenario that our TTIQ system is no worse than it was in Melbourne last year. Now, I don't think the Australian public understand that the safe plan, and the Prime Minister says the word safe a lot, has anything like 40,000 cases a day in our short-term future.
Yeah, I mean, that's a shock to me. I don't think I've ever heard anyone kind of really focusing on that level. And presumably it does still take us a while to get to 40,000 cases a day. And obviously if 80% of people are vaccinated, then we're not going to be seeing as many hospitalizations and deaths as we would in an unvaccinated population. But with 40,000 cases a day, it would seem to me to be just simple math that we'll still be seeing quite a few deaths and hospitalizations. Is that right?
We absolutely will, according to the Doherty modeling. And again, I don't think that, and a lot of illness and a lot of lockdowns and a lot of absenteeism, like this idea that, you know, once we hit 80%, things will pretty much get back to normal is not what a fair reading of the Doherty modeling says. And again, that's not the Doherty Institute's fault. That's the people that are leaning too heavily on it. Now, here's the good news. I just said that 80% vaccine coverage with partially effective TTIQ puts us on track for around 40,000 to 50,000 cases a day. 80% vaccine coverage with optimal TTIQ, so if we get cases down really low again, like, you know, in Queensland, they're zero. In Perth, they're zero. In New South Wales, hopefully they get them back down. New South ACT and Victoria are still pushing really hard. According to the Doherty modelling, if we've got 80% vaccine coverage and optimal testing trace, we're looking at more like 50 new cases a day. Not 50,000, 50.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
And the only difference in the modelling there is the testing and tracing system. So we have to get, according to the Doherty modelling, if you want to save a lot of lives, if you want to save a lot of pain and discomfort and a lot of illness, let alone lives, then you have to get cases back down really low before you open up with very high vaccine coverage. Because if your starting point is a small number of cases and your starting point is a heavily vaccinated population, then high quality testing and tracing means that we don't get this incredible blowout. But 80% vaccine coverage with partially effective TTIQ, we're looking at 40 to 50,000 cases a day. And that is where the debate, I think, needs to go. And I think our state premiers know that.
Yeah.
Andrew Barr in the ACT, the chief minister's begun to talk about how important TTIQ is and the need to understand these assumptions more.
It's clear that we can't base our decisions on optimal TTIQ, that will not be possible with very high case numbers. So,
and you can't keep Delta out forever. You can't assume there'll be zero cases, even if you've had zero cases today.
So I think people have begun to realise that it's important, but as a modeller, it's staggering to realise how sensitive the Doherty modelling is to the effectiveness of our test and trace and isolate and quarantine.
Yeah, and I guess it's the difference between, are you trying to save lives or are you just trying to avoid lockdowns as well? Because I was really struck at the beginning there. Like, it's quite different, as you were saying, to ask Doherty, what should we do next in public health terms compared to how do we avoid lockdowns? Those are two really different starting points. But Richard, I wanted to ask you about the cost-benefit analysis and if there is one that's attached to this of opening up.
What happens in Phase B when you hit 70%, which is based on the best medical and economic advice available to all leaders in Australia, the Doherty Institute, working together with all the state and Commonwealth treasuries, made it very clear that once you hit those levels, it is neither in our health or economic interests to be going down that path.
Obviously, lockdowns are costing the economy a huge amount. New South Wales is a huge state. It generates a lot of things and services and sells a lot of products. That's essentially why people are trying to avoid lockdowns. But we know if we look at climate change or fixing domestic violence services or anything else, there's always got to be a cost-benefit analysis. What does the cost-benefit analysis say this time around?
Well, we haven't done one. Like,
what?
Everyone, exactly. And this is not a criticism of Doherty. The Doherty model.
Well, they're not economists, so presumably, they're not economists, yeah.
Right? There's no, right? So the Doherty Institute have been asked to model how much vaccination we need before we open up if we want to reduce the number of lockdowns we have. And the answer they've come up with is 80% if we've got really high TTIQ, which at the moment it doesn't look like we're going to have. So no one has actually said, so here is the cost-benefit analysis for why hundreds, thousands of people might or should die in order to avoid X days of lockdown. Now, don't get me wrong, we in a democracy, we have to make hard decisions all the time, and we don't always use modelling. But what a clear example when it comes to climate change. Oh, we couldn't possibly, you know, implement measures to reduce greenhouse gas emissions if it hurts a particular industry or it hurts a particular group in society. Oh, no, we need detailed cost-benefit analysis. We need lots of economic modelling. We need compensation in place. Think about all of the excuses that we have for not addressing the science of climate change. But here we've got a Prime Minister saying, oh, sure, some people are going to die. They'll almost certainly be the unvaccinated. We kind of know who they are, but we can't stay in our cave forever. So we're going to open up, and the Doherty modelling says we might be on track for 50,000 cases a day, but, you know, we can't keep living in a cave.
Yeah, that's just so the price we've got to pay, Richard.
Price we've got to pay, common sense says. So there's an incredible contradiction here between the alleged excuse for not tackling climate change. Some people might be adversely affected. We can't be certain about all of the costs and all of the benefits, so let's do nothing instead, versus the decision-making approach we're being told is appropriate for COVID. And that is, sure, we know a lot of people are going to get very sick and a lot of people are going to die, but, you know, time moves on. Got to look towards the freedoms. Now, again, like, let me just be optimistic here. If New South Wales can get its outbreak under control, if we can get case numbers back down below 100, even if it's not below zero, with low case numbers and high vaccination and our excellent contact tracing, The Doherty modelling says we might be looking at 50 cases a day. That is very much worth pushing for. That is very much worth striving for. But anyone that thinks that the 80% vaccine number is the main game hasn't read the modelling. The main game is, do you think contact tracing will be optimal, partially effective, or I would suggest at the moment, possibly not effective at all? Because opening up at 80% vaccination with a compromised test and trace system, according to the modelling the Prime Minister talks so much about, is going to lead to a lot of very sick people and a lot of avoidable deaths.
Yeah, the difference between 50 cases a day or 50,000 cases a day, like, it's huge.
It's enormous. And again, you know, to just read the modelling, that's the thing that sticks out. So surely the Prime Minister is well advised and is aware of this. He's right to tell everyone to get out there and get vaccinated. I could not agree with him more. But we have to look at the real world. We have to look at what's actually happening in New South Wales. We have to look at, you know, I live in Canberra, you live in Canberra, Eb. Our safety is at risk from the New South Wales government's inability to get its virus under control. Because if the ACT, quote, opens up to New South Wales, then our health system will very quickly be overwhelmed. Whereas if New South Wales had things under control when we open up to New South Wales, then with high-quality testing and tracing and lots of vaccination, that's not the case. So, yes, vaccination's important, but the Doherty modelling does not say it's all about vaccine coverage. It's about vaccine coverage, it's about test and trace, it's about other public health measures, and it's also about the assumption that, you know, that vaccines keep remaining effective over a long period of time and that we don't get new strains showing up.
New variants. Yeah, so just to finish up, it did make me think about the Chief Minister here in the ACT. He's talking about, well, we're doing so well with vaccination rates when, you know, New South Wales hits 70, we'll be at 80. When they hit 80, we'll be at 90. It's very clear that he's much more ambitious than the national plan calls for him to be. Looking ahead, do you think the other state premiers will take a similar view? Casting your mind ahead, I know economics isn't necessarily good at predicting the future either.
Oh, we're willing to have a go.
Where do you think we're headed, Richard?
I think at the moment it's very unlikely that states that have no or very low levels of COVID are going to open up in the way the Prime Minister is talking about to a state like New South Wales that has it rampant.
Have a look out in Queensland at the moment. You can go to work, you can go to school, you can go watch sport, you can play community sport, you can go to a restaurant, you can go out. We haven't given up.
Just because the New South Wales government has made a mess of it doesn't mean the rest of us should suffer.
The national plan is about all of us moving together. It's also not a national plan for picnics, just quietly. So the notion of giving up vaccine that could have been in Victorians' arms so that people in other states can go and have picnics, no, that's not what we're doing.
I think common sense suggests that's bad. I think any honest reading of the Doherty modelling says that's a bad idea. And while it's true that we will be a lot safer the faster people get vaccinated, it's not true that hitting 80% vaccination and opening up means that we'll be safe, because if TTIQ is compromised, the modelling shows that's not the case. And it's just not true to say that lockdowns won't be in our future. It's not true. So I think we have to do everything we can to get vaccinated as fast as we can. And clearly the Prime Minister's trying to move the debate from his past performance to future freedoms. The guy that said it wasn't a race is now keen to call the race early. But the virus doesn't care what we say. All it does is spread when we're near each other. And if we let people get near each other in large numbers before we've vaccinated large numbers, the Doherty modelling makes clear what will happen. So I guess I'm a bit pessimistic that the New South Wales government will take the steps that are needed to get their virus back under control. But if
listening to their press conferences, it sounds to me more like they've already kind of given up on that hope.
Well, I think because they keep saying if we all get vaccinated, it will be all right. But at 80% vaccination in New South Wales, you're still going to have millions of unvaccinated people, and it will just spread very quickly through those people if we just open up. And that, again, that's not what the modelling says we should do. But my optimism, I suppose, is that I think other state premiers pretty much understand what I'm saying, and both will keep fighting to keep the case numbers low because they know if they get too high, they will lose control of the tracing and then things get bad very fast. And I don't think they're going to open their borders to a state where it's rampant, where there are so many unlinked cases, the Premier doesn't even publish the data about it anymore.
Is there anything else you wanted to add, Richard?
Oh, get vaccinated. Get vaccinated. really, get vaccinated. But 80% vaccination sounds like a lot. But when you understand that ignores kids, that means we're looking at more than 8 million unvaccinated Australians who can get sick, can get very sick, and who can spread it. Mm. So we've got a lot of work to do in front of us. But vaccines work, and contact tracing really works, but it can only work if we keep the case numbers low. So we need to have highly effective TTIQ, and you can only have that if you start with low case numbers, and we need a lot of vaccinated people. And how's this for some good news? I heard Andrew Barr, the ACT Chief Minister, say that in Canberra, 99% of people aged over 70 are vaccinated. 99%.
That's impressive, and maybe a good note to end on.
no hesitancy there.
No, definitely not. Thanks, Richard. That's all we've got time for today. This episode was recorded on Tuesday, the 31st of August, 2021, and things may have changed since recording. You can visit australiainstitute.org.au for all our latest research, including Richard's paper on some of the assumptions about TTIQ in the national plan. We're on Twitter at the Oz Institute with an AUS. My Twitter handle is Ebony_Bennett with a double NTT, and Richard Dennis is at RDNS_TAI. Our producer, Jennifer Macy, is at Jennifer Macy, and our theme music is by Jonathan McFeet from Pulse and Thrum, with additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Stay safe out there, get vaccinated as soon as you possibly can, and thanks for listening.